A shoot shall come out from the stock of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. His delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. A shoot shall come out from the stock of Jesse. This isn't a great forest like the tall pines of northern Michigan or the California redwoods, or a garden of purity and perfection, or these humble boxwoods in our garden. A shoot, a small bit of something poking through the soil amidst the decay. A chance at life, a chance when certain doom is expected. A shoot from Jesse's line, Jesse, the father of David, David, the runt of the family, definitely not even the most powerful brother among him, let alone the most powerful member of his family, let alone Judah. Certainly not that boy. No chance he could unite the tribes into a single kingdom. No way. Still in Isaiah's day, a need for another shoot, another David. Not David the king, conqueror, Messiah, someone else. To us, another boy. He shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt around his waist, and faithfulness the belt around his loins. For Isaiah, righteousness and justice are linked, as is judgment and equality. It's all of a tangle, right? And we often pull at these strings, right? Try and get them away from each other and try to separate and isolate them so that they're much easier to judge. But hear how Isaiah is speaking to an unbalanced and unrighteous world being changed and reformed. It isn't the false equality of unrighteous niceness. It's to bring equity to where there is inequity. It's to bring low those powers which might oppress and destroy, not because things look fair or seem sound, but to match God's sense of righteousness. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put its hand on the hole, over the hole of the asp. Or the adder's den, excuse me. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain. For the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. But lions don't want to eat straw. We love this passage. I love Isaiah 11. I crave for the sense of righteous judgment God calls for. But we have to be honest with ourselves, and that sense of equality we are longing for, that sense of the upside down economy Jesus calls the kingdom of God. Not only does equality mean naming righteous the ones we toss into our gutters, but it is to acknowledge that predators and prey aren't equal. You can't just claim they are. Put them in the field together and say, now you two behave, you know. Good luck, and good luck. Predators eat prey. And the only way they will get along is if the predators stop attacking prey. It's the only way. It's not on the prey to be less appetizing. It's not on them to dress down and not give off that thing that might trigger the predator's carnal nature. The kingdom God reveals is one in which wolves no longer feast on lambs, but instead eat plants like lambs. Carnivores become herbivores. They are the ones who change. Equality isn't always a two-way street or a survival of the fittest. Equality, Isaiah's equality, Jesus' jubilee, kingdom, God's dream for creation, it's all about a far more radical equality. It means lions have to eat straw, even though they don't want to be changed. We have to change so that we don't fear each other, the different, the foreigner. We give up our bigotry. We change regardless of whether or not they do. This is our background as we approach the birth story that we will be hearing so soon. A birth story in which a lion stalks a people. The writer of Matthew gives us such a short narrative of Jesus' birth. It's over before it's begun. But the real action comes after, as the brutal King Herod hears of the newborn king and seeks to have him killed. And when he can't find him, he slaughters all the infant toddler boys in the region, all of them. Heinous, despicable act. Herod is no Messiah, no God-anointed king. He's a bloody dictator and despot, and a frightened, paranoid, pathetic man wielding incredible power. And yet, from this destruction, a shoot survives. This baby saved in Egypt by his parents, Mary and Joseph, the picture of humility, seemingly foregoing their royal status just to be together to save this baby boy alone. The contrast couldn't be greater. Humility versus arrogance, lowly versus powerful, hope versus fear. Our present moment, this season of Advent, displays that same contrast. Right? We buy junk to honor the one who told us to give everything away. Like a tsunami, we're thrown from our feet by a wave of consumption, supposedly to celebrate the birth of a Messiah born in poverty. Our story really has been hijacked and is unrecognizable. This time of preparation, the story of salvation, used to sell Coca-Cola and Amazon Prime subscriptions. We spend $450 billion on Christmas every year. $450 billion. To make clean water accessible to every person on the planet, it would take something in the ballpark of 10 billion. This is wrong. This is what's upside down. These are the righteous who Isaiah says will be treated with equity, the millions who walk miles a day for dirty water. This Advent season, preparing for Christmas, isn't a time of going broke to have it all. It's a time of spending less and giving more at the same time. That's the story we're hearing about. Jesus came to turn the world upside down, to help us see not only that vision of the wolf and the lamb as an abstract idea, some perfect future or a beautiful metaphor that it is, but to see the way out of the rut we're in. The rut of inequality, predators and prey, abusers and abused, monsters and victims, and to seek true equality, equality which requires changes in our world, changes to the way we treat each other and see one another, both in our laws and in our personal practices. Changes which help us see inequality and how we might be present to it. The birth story we are preparing to hear isn't just about the fact Jesus showed up. It's about the way he came to us. In poverty, to outcasts hunted by a powerful predator. So the story invites us to go far beyond buying stuff and spreading joy, but to also seek truth in our world and seek God's work in places we usually don't look, where the people we overlook reside. Ignore the ways of empire which destroy our souls and impoverish our lives. Don't succumb to the voices of consumption who tell this story of revolution and transformation simply to enslave our minds to buy more junk, as they also blind us to the needs of others. Instead, choose to spend less and give meaningful gifts. Spend less on those of us who have more than enough, and give more to those without. If you're looking for ways to give meaningfully to those in need, I recommend Episcopal Fund for Human Need, which is our diocesan outreach effort, the Episcopal Relief and Development, the Episcopal Church's international ministry, which is among the most effective outreach efforts in the world, Charity Water, which is an extremely effective organization that gets potable water to people all over the world, and 100% of your donation goes to that water. And of course, our ministries, including Toys for Tots, which is due today, our ongoing homeless collection, our health insurance ministry, and of course, the congregation itself. Because celebrating Christmas this way and spending less on the stuff we don't need and more on those who are suffering, well, that's about as radical an idea now as it was then.